Where? And when?
In Berlin, for a short period in the early 80s.
That's vague.
It was before I was born. It was in 1983. Privately, I thought trying to find the man was a hopeless task. I thought my mother was becoming a silly old woman. But I was happy to go through the motions, and don't worry, she doesn't understand what we're saying.
Svetlana Hoth smiled and nodded at nothing in particular. I asked, why was your mother in Berlin?
She was with the Red Army,
her daughter said. Doing what?
She was with an infantry regiment.
As what?
She was a political commissar. All regiments had one. In fact, all regiments had several.
So what did you do about tracing the American?
My mother was clear that her friend John had been in the army, not the Marines. That was my starting point. So I telephoned from London to your Department of Defense and asked what I should do. After many explanations, I was transferred to the Human Resources Command. They have a press office. The man I spoke to was quite touched. He thought it was a sweet story. Possibly he saw a public relations aspect. I don't know. Some good news at last, perhaps, instead of all the bad. He said he would make inquiries. Personally, I thought he was wasting his time. John is a very common name. And as I understand it, most American soldiers rotate through Germany, and most visit Berlin. So I thought the pool of possibilities would grow enormous, which apparently it did. The next thing I knew was weeks later when a clerk called Susan Mark telephoned me. I wasn't home. She left a message. She said she had been assigned the task. She told me that some names that sound like John are actually contractions of Jonathan, spelled without the letter H. She wanted to know if my mother had ever seen the name written down, perhaps on a note. I asked my mother and called Susan Mark back and told her we were sure it was John with the letter H. The conversation with Susan turned out to be very pleasant, and we had many more. We almost became friends, I think, the way you sometimes can on the phone, like pen pals, but talking instead of writing. She told me a lot about herself. She was a very lonely woman, and I think our conversations brightened her days.
Lee asked,
and then what? Eventually I received news from Susan. She said she had arrived at some preliminary conclusions. I suggested we meet here in New York, almost as a way to consummate our friendship. You know, dinner and maybe a show. As a way of saying thank you for her efforts, certainly. But she never arrived.
I asked, what time were you expecting her?
About 10 o'clock. She said she would leave after work.
Too late for dinner and a show.
She planned to stay over. I booked a room for her.
When did you get here?
3 days ago.
How?
British Airways from London.
I said, you hired a local crew.
Lila Hoth nodded.
I asked, when?
Just before we got here.
Why?
It's expected, and sometimes useful.
Where did you find them?
They advertise in the Moscow papers and in the expatriate papers in London. It's good business for them, and it's a kind of status check for us. If you go overseas unassisted, you look weak. And it's better not to do that.
They told me you brought a crew of your own.
She looked surprised. I don't have a crew of my own. Why on earth would they say that? I don't understand it.
They said you brought a bunch of scary types. For a second, she looked mystified and a little annoyed. Then some kind of comprehension dawned in her face. She seemed to be a fast analyst. She said,
perhaps they were inventive strategically. When Susan didn't arrive, I sent them out looking. I thought, I'm paying them, they might as well do some work. And my mother has a lot of hope invested in this business. So I didn't want to come all this way and then fail at the last minute. So I offered them a bonus. We grow up believing that money talks loudest in America. So perhaps those men were making up a story for you. Perhaps they were inventing a scary alternative to make sure they got their extra money so that you would be tempted to talk to them.
I said nothing. Then something else dawned in her face, some new realization. She said,
I have no crew, as you call it. Just one man, Leonid, one of my husband's old team. He couldn't get the new job. He's a bit of a lame duck, I'm afraid. So I kept him on. Right now, he's at Penn Station. He's waiting for you. The police told me that the witness had gone to Washington. I assumed you would take the train and come back the same way. Did you not?
Yes, I came back on the train.
Then Leonid must have missed you. He had your picture. He was supposed to ask you to telephone me. Poor man, he must still be there.
She stood up and headed for the credenza, for the room phone, which gave me a temporary tactical problem, because Leonid's cell was in my pocket. Chapter 31. In principle, I know how to turn off a cell phone. I have seen it done, and I have done it myself on more than one occasion. On most models, you hold down the red button for 2 long seconds. But the phone was in my pocket. No room to open it, and no chance of finding the red button by feel alone. Too suspicious to take it out and turn it off in full view of everyone. Lila Hoth hit 9 for a line, and dialed. I put my hand in my pocket and used my thumbnail and found the catch and unlatched the battery, separated it from the phone and turned it sideways to avoid any chance of accidental electrical contact. Lila Hoth waited, and then she sighed and hung up.
He's hopeless, but very loyal.
I tried to track Leonid's likely progress in my head. Cops, paramedics, probably an obligatory trip to the St. Vincent's emergency room. No ID, possibly no English, maybe worries and questions and detention. Then the trip back uptown. How long of a detention, I didn't know. How fast of a trip, I couldn't predict. I said, the local crew mentioned John Sansom's name.